You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to noon, my guest and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. Today's guest is Phil Ludwig, founder and CEO of Teen Rescue and Julian Youth Academy. Phil speaks regularly on family advocacy issues, addressing topics such as teens in crisis, family dynamics, parental rights, conflict resolution, and other topics related to healthy family relationships. Welcome, Phil, to Answers for the Family.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. I'm so happy to have you here. I want to tell our audience a little bit, just from the standpoint that I've known of Phil's program for, well, since it started, which was about 15 years ago. I had the privilege of meeting some of the young people that have gone through the program, both before they've gone through and after. And I got to tell you, I've seen some incredible things done. Phil, what I'd like you to do is, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the program and what drove you to attempt such a huge undertaking?
Well, I used to be a San Diego police officer, and I think a lot of law enforcement officers kind of realize how the system really does not support the family, and a lot of the kids that we deal with, we don't know what to deal with. You know, we don't know what to do with them, especially in a runaway situation or a hostile home environment. And I think our heart just goes out to them in the sense of wanting to provide some sort of better system, better direction that they can get some help and head in a different direction. And I sat a lot of kids down on the curbside and just said, "Hey, where are you heading with this? You know, this is miserable. You're miserable. Your family's miserable. You know, let's get you pointed in the right direction." And so that kind of created a heart for it. And then, but being a police officer is pretty time consuming. And so you can only do so much. So I ended up getting hit by a drunk driver and retired medically, and was kind of wondering, well, what am I going to do when I grow up? You know, it's kind of starting over. And a lady came to my front door and asked me if I could help, that her child had run away. And I was kind of like, well, I'm not sure I can help you. And she said, you know, she was pretty desperate. She was in tears. So I said, okay, well, I'll try and go out and find her. So I found her in about 2 days and had to sit down on the curb kind of thing and said, look, you know, where are you heading with this? And she was pretty despaired too. And so we brought her home and got her some counseling. That felt pretty good, just to be able to redirect this child. And then...
Well, and it sounds like also you're now doing it because you don't have the restraints of the police department. Is that what you're saying? I mean, at this point, have you already left the police department?
Yeah, I retired in 1980, and due to the injuries that I sustained mm-hmm. in the car accident, and so that kind of freed me up to have the time to do this. And after that parent, I'd helped that one neighbor, kind of forgot about it, and all of a sudden the phone rang about a week later, and it's another parent, and she's saying, hey, you helped this Sandy, you know, can you help me? I'm like, well, okay, first of all, she's giving out my home number, you know, why is she doing that? And the second thing was, you know, okay, you know, I'm willing to help. And so it just kind of sparked an interest, and so I surveyed about 150 police departments and said, hey, look, if there was a service that was trying to help those kids that were falling between the cracks, that, you know, weren't bad enough to be incarcerated, were just kind of being missed, but yet still needed some intervention, how could we assist that? And boy, I got an overwhelming response. It was amazing. And so my wife and I came up with Teen Rescue as a name, and started from there, and it's grown over the last, well, since 1989, and we've helped well over 15,000 families, and it's been really exciting. It's just been tremendous to see. You're not going to reach everybody, but you reach a lot of kids and a lot of families, a lot of parents. We've actually restored a lot of marriages through our programs, which is not our focus, but
but a nice benefit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give us a description of sort of the typical teen that fits in your program, or at this point, let's stay with the girls program, but what is the kind of a picture of this girl?
Well, we do have a nationwide referral service, but I won't go on that right now. But as far as specifically to our school that we've developed, it's really designed for kids that have had some tragedy in their life, such as victimization, adoption, or have lost a parent to divorce, or, you know, whatever circumstances they may find themselves in. And we kind of customize it to the family and to the special needs. But we definitely want to take a certain type of child that is consistent with the other children that we're helping at the same time. And most of these, if you were to rate them, I know there's two rating systems out there. There's 1 to 5 for severity, and there's 1 to 15. It just depends on what scale you're using. We're probably about a 0 to 1 on the 1 to 5, and probably a 5 to 6 on the 1 to 15 scale.
Okay. I think that the professionals that are out there that are listening, they're going to understand that. But now some of the families, explain what that means.
Yeah. Basically, if you're, let's say, dealing with a 1 to 5 scale, a 5 would be, you know, psych hospital, you know, maybe even a state hospital, heavy medication. A 1 would be someone who's having more behavioral problems. And that's why I say 0 to 1, because we do take kids that are, you know, that definitely have behavioral problems and have acting out, but they're not committing hardcore felonies. They're not consistent, you know, habitual offenders.
Yeah, they're not doing drive-bys.
Yeah, especially by my house. So it's one of those things where we're focused on a very specific group of kids that I found in the police department were falling through the crack, that no one was helping because they weren't bad enough, but yet they were really in trouble and really needed somebody to change their direction.
Some guidance, exactly.
Yeah. So,
well, good. What's the length of the program?
Well, the length of Julian Youth Academy is 15 to 18 months. And people kind of like, wow, that's kind of a long time. But what we've learned over doing this many years is that it's not how long the child's in the program. It's how long the child does well. I mean, you can turn a child around relatively quickly. But I think most kids really want to turn around. They want to have a relationship with mom and dad. They want to make the right choices. But when they've been doing this for 12 to 14, 15 years, even sometimes 16 or 17, as we've taken kids that old, it's pretty hard to turn things around in 2 or 3 months. And so we've found that it really is important that they rebuild their foundation, and that their foundation has completely changed. It's a part of them, and it's the part of their makeup. And so they can survive when they leave the program and be able to sustain that new direction. So we also have, after the 15 to 18 months in the program, then they can, it's actually mandatory that they participate in what we call an aftercare support. And what that is about 6 months of a staff keeping them accountable. It's a pretty intense program. It's almost a sub-program at home where they're required to do many different tasks, such as community service, participating in some sort of, assistance to others. And then just accountability at home with the parents, the rules, the chores, the responsibility.
Yeah, that's a huge thing for me. And I've been a proponent for aftercare for years. I have seen so many families. In fact, I've been contacted by families. I have one in particular that I think of that we had transported his child to 3 different programs.
Mm-hmm.
And in each case, the child came back. They were doing really well for a while, and then they'd start to backslide. Mm-hmm. And the parent would end up calling us saying, what did the program do wrong? They failed us. And finally, after the third time that we retrieved her, he said, you know, I don't get it. He says, well, you know, what is the deal here? Why are these programs failing and stuff? And I said, you know, I think you need to look at the common denominator. And
yeah.
The common denominator is they're coming back into your home.
Yeah.
And for a lot of parents, that's hard to look at.
Well, I think that's why we put a big emphasis on parent involvement, because as you know, Alan, a lot of the parents are struggling themselves with being consistent, conflict resolution, boundary setting, and it's really important that they be taught how to interact and listen to their child. Because, you know, it's funny, I share this a lot in my seminars. You know, when you ask a child what the problem is, they'll say that mom and dad don't listen to me. When you ask the parent what's wrong, they'll say, my kid doesn't listen to me. I'm thinking, there's a common denominator there. And what the truth is, though, it's not that they're not listening. it's that they're not validating or not agreeing with. And so what we try and teach them is, look, splitting hairs with definitions is important. You can go to a therapist and you say, oh, I need therapy. And they'll say, okay, what's going on? Well, my parents never listened to me for my whole childhood. The therapist is going to go, wow, that's sad. And, you know, and is going to work with you on that. Well, it's a little different if you walk in and you go, well, why are you in therapy? Well, my parents never agreed with me. Mm-hmm. You know, the therapist is going, well, get out of my office. You know, I mean, what are you wasting my time for? And I think that when we allow our child to say, hey, you're not listening to me, I think that's important that we key in on that and say, you know what, it's not that I'm not listening to you. It's that I don't agree. And there's a big difference. You know, one can end you up in therapy and one can't. And I think that that's the kind of things that we try and teach the parents, that it's really important that those fine lines are dealt with and not just ignored as just, oh, that's not a big deal. So we have a really strong emphasis on parent training, and if the parents don't want to be involved, we won't accept them, because we really feel it's that important. And I think it's really helped our success in changing marriages, you know, working with the parents in conflict resolution and boundary setting. It's made a big difference, I think, with the program, and we feel really, really proud of what we've been able to accomplish there.
Well, speaking of success, that's actually one of the questions that I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. How do you measure success?
Well, I kind of struggle with it at first, because a lot of parents will call up or agencies will call up and say, well, what's your, you know, success rate? And I kind of have a sensitivity to that question, maybe more than I should. But I always want to ask, well, what's your definition of success?
Right, you know, which is exactly why I asked you how you measure it rather than what's your success rate, because
yeah.
that's a very general question.
Yeah, you know, people say, oh, 90%. Okay, great. What does that mean? Yeah, you know, does it mean they didn't kill themselves or did they stop smoking? I think that it's not a number or a definition that you can clarify. Each person is going to have their own definition of success. I think our goal is for the child to have a relationship with the parent. They're still going to have conflicts. And I think if we're trying to avoid conflicts, that's a big problem in itself. But I think that generally, I think we want to be able to drive through those conflicts, because I think when you teach someone how to deal with a conflict, it empowers them. And now, all of a sudden, now it's a strength, because when you have a conflict with someone, let's say it's pretty intense, and you get through it with them, your relationship is much stronger than it was before the conflict, and so it's actually an empowering tool to be able to get through a conflict. And so we kind of encourage the families, look, you're gonna have problems, don't get all worked up about that, but the key is how you work through those. And I think that that's where my success is based on, you know, are they having a relationship with their folks? You know, can they spend the next 25 Christmases with each other? You know, or are they going to alienate? And I think that it's really important that parents understand where their kids are coming from. I think too many times parents are thinking of it from an adult's point of view, a common sense. And we all know that the brain doesn't develop until 25, so we got to give these kids a break. You know, they don't have the common sense, and so we're kind of shoving it down their throat, saying, you need to think better. You're not thinking straight. Well, part of it is they can't. And so it's really important that we come alongside them and say, you know what, well, let's process this together. What are the pros and cons of doing it this way or that way? And I think it's a lot of work. Parenting is just a ton of work, and I think a lot of parents are fatigued. They don't know. I mean, think about it. We get trained for everything we do in our life. Everything we do in our life, we get an education, we get a degree. But here we go into parenting, and how many of us had, I survey it every seminar, and probably less than 7% have had any kind of formal training as a parent.
Thank you. I have brought that up before, and I've done it in some of the settings where there's a conference of professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And we all tend to agree. Mm-hmm. You know, that how is it that we're going to be given auto shop. We're going to learn more about working on a car than we are on how to work on a relationship with another human being that we're going to spend the rest of our life with.
Absolutely.
You know, or raising children that we're going to be with, you know, at least 18 years. And as things keep changing, it seems like that gets longer and longer.
Yeah. Well, I call it extreme parenting, because if you don't know what to do, then you base it on how you were brought up. Well, if you weren't brought up in the most healthiest way, then all of a sudden you're going to the other extreme, because you say, well, my parents were very strict, so I'm going to be permissive. You don't deliberately think that way, but you didn't like what you experienced, so you go to the other extreme. And so it's just back and forth, and that creates as much problem as being too strict. So, yeah, it's kind of sad. But You know, we put a lot of emphasis on it, and we found that it's been very, very successful. And parents are hungry for it. They really want it. And they say, you know, I want to know how to deal with my child. I love my child. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned a little bit about Teen Rescue, and I know that the questions I've asked so far have been focused on Julian Youth Academy. What the listeners do need to know is that they are a lot more than that. I mean, with Teen Rescue, it's they're getting calls from people all over the United States, and fortunately, they're able to help them and help guide them and direct them to places that may be able to help. So tell us a little bit about that, if you will. And yeah.
Well, when I first started, it actually started as a referral service, and it was just kind of trying to plug parents into the best possible scenario for their situation. We did a lot of location and helping, you know, find a runaway and then getting them programs that were within their cost limitations, religious background, geographical area. It's getting harder and harder to find the geographical because California is pretty thin on programs. But generally speaking, the referral service is really the core of our business. And what we do is parents call in, we do a profile, and we kind of find out what their needs are, and then we have a database of programs all over the country and even outside the country. And our emphasis is to protect the family. There's no fee for this. There's no kickbacks. It's strictly something we want to do that we feel is valuable. And parents need an advocate that's not got an agenda, some sort of hidden agenda there. And so I kind of resisted actually starting my own program because of that. I didn't want to have an agenda, but people said, hey, Phil, you know, there's such a need in California for a program. You need to start something. So I kind of caved on that one. But to remain ethical, what we do is when parents call, we give them at least 3 to 4 other programs that are equivalent to ours that they can choose from, because we really want to remain ethical. We're a Christian company. We service anyone that calls. But it's really important to us that we don't take advantage of someone who's in crisis, who is vulnerable to just, you know, a sales pitch. And so it's important that we don't take kickbacks. It's important that we refer to the proper place, and then we help them with finding transportation. We help them in coaching them how to find their child if their child's runaway. We do consulting. You know, I want to be careful here, but we do know quite a bit about the law as far as custody and what you can do. And certain states have different laws and transporting across state lines. And so we kind of coach the parents on staying out of trouble in that area.
Well, after 15 years of running a successful girls program, are you a glutton for punishment? Why would you now? I mean, I'm sharing something now that you guys are now looking at opening up a boys program.
Yep, that's it. So I'm glutton for punishment.
Tell us about that.
Everybody tells me that girls is harder, but I haven't experienced that. But maybe that's just because I'm doing it. But we've been wanting to start a boys for many years, and not to get into my own tragedies, but I had a couple tragedies in my personal life that prohibited me from starting it before. And one was I lost my wife to cancer, and so that put that off for several years as I took care of my boys. And then the second time I tried to start, we burned down completely in the San Diego Cedar Fires. And so it's, you know, I'm kind of hoping that the third time is not going to be a problem, you know, trying it again. I'm waiting for the big catastrophe to happen. But we're excited about it. We're hoping to open the doors September 15th for our boys program. And what's nice about it is the infrastructure is there. So you just kind of shift it over and start it up. And so we're excited about that. We get a lot of calls. And there's a lot of people that want something in California that they can visit their child and be, you know, participate in the parent training and the seminars. And so it was really important for us, and we felt the timing was right, and so we went for it. So,
okay, well, share a little bit about it, and again, understanding that there is, you know, both professionals and parents that may be listening, and again, from all over the world, because again, to remind everybody, this is internet radio, and people can be listening from anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we don't speak Chinese, so that might be a problem, but short of that, we are definitely open to anyone we can help. In fact, it's kind of funny. We actually had just this wave. I've never been able to figure this out, but we had a wave of 8 Chinese families that came in And a couple of them didn't speak English. The child, fortunately, did, but the parents didn't. And it was amazing. It was just this big wave of families that came in. They didn't know each other. They didn't refer each other. And then all of a sudden, it went away. It was really weird. But I'm just excited about helping kids. And when you see a kid turn around and a family reunite, and you feel that you're a part of that, that's a pretty exciting thing. It's something to get, you know, you get paid for it too, and that's cool. But you just go home and you feel like you're doing something valuable. And so I'm really excited about the boys program. You know, the boys is definitely different than girls, and we're going to have some activities for the guys. I've run a boys in the past, and so we'll probably have like a ropes course and things to keep, you know, the boys, you know, active and getting a lot of exercise. But the program, in a sense, will just be exactly the same as it is for the girls. Our infrastructure, you know, computer programs, school, you know, all that, you know, accreditation, all that's in place. So it's not something we have to redo.
Why don't you, walk us through a typical day. So again, you know, think about the parents that are out there. Walk them through a typical day of what their child would be going through.
Well, kids really respond to structure. And so, you know, we're not a boot camp, and I want to emphasize we're not a boot camp. We're not a wilderness program, but we are a relationship-based program that works with having the child really trust the staff. And if the staff don't, my staff don't rotate in and out. They work 14 hours a day with these kids. And the reason I did that is as I surveyed the different programs through Teen Rescue, when we were referring to different programs, I looked at what was working and what wasn't. And I said, well, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel, that this thing is working. And the ones that were working were the relationship-based program, because the kids would connect and bond with the staff, and then they would open up. And so we just felt that this was the priority of our program. It's not that you can't do it right another way, but this was working for us. And so when the kids get up in the morning, they have, we are a Christian-based program, so we don't shove it down their throats. We're not Bible thumpers, but, you know, bottom line is our staff are Christian. And when the kids wake up in the morning, they can opt out of any kind of devotion if they want and just read a book or something like that, but just a quiet time to reflect. And then from there, they would go, you know, into breakfast, and then from there, they would go into school. The school's an independent study program, so they can get caught up if they're behind, which a lot of kids have done. They'll be a PE, of course, and they'll go back to school after lunch. And then in the evenings, there'll be different programs. There'll be, you know, a movie night. There'll be, you know, a speaker maybe. You know, it just kind of varies from night to night. And then they're in bed, you know, at a regular hour, probably 9:30, I think it is, 9. And the kids really respond to structure. And we take them water skiing when the weather's, you know, pleasant. And it's funny that the day after the ski trip, a lot of times the kids are a little disorientated, a little grumpy, probably from being tired. But also I think it's because the schedule's off and they really respond to it. So we really encourage the parents to have a schedule. And I think that when I've interviewed kids and they come home and they take off and they're gone all night, they come home, they go to bed, they don't interact with mom and dad, they're up in the morning, they go off to school, they interact with their friends, and this is a daily diet. It's a daily diet for disaster, and it alienates the relationship. It alienates, all they're doing is getting input from their friends, which a lot of them may not be healthy, and it just divides the family over a period of time. Oh. And I think it's so important to make family time. Do things fun together that aren't, you know, corny. The kids will enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, water skiing's great, you know, those kind of sports, snowboarding, those kind of things. If you're too old to do that, find something that's a little bit more mild.
I agree completely about as far as the family time. I think that's super important. And also you mentioned about them getting caught up, and I know having dealt with a lot of these kids, they have the attitude of why bother? Mm-hmm. They get so far behind in the public school and they start running with those other kids that are also behind.
Right.
And they have a why bother attitude. So the ability to go to a program that's going to get them caught up and in many cases get them ahead of the game, mm-hmm. I think that's huge in building the self-confidence that they need, you know, to push on.
Yeah, they get pretty discouraged, I think, and then they kind of shut down, like you say. And I think they need to, you know, have hope that, hey, I can get caught up. I can get back on track.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break, and we will be back with Answers for the Family.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Sister, to me, what can I say?
listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
And we're back with Phil Ludwig. Phil, one of the things that I don't want to miss is that can you tell the audience how to reach you? Give us a website and phone number.
Absolutely. The 800 number is 800-494-2200. Again, that's 800-494-2200. And our website is teenrescue.com.
Okay. And for those that want to get in touch with the show, we are Answers for the Family. That is the numeral 4, and you go to answersforthefamily.com. We love your comments. There is a comments page. This is a growing, it's a growing show. It's a new show, but it's growing all the time, and with your help and your comments, we can continue to do that. We also have a page you can go to if you want to be a guest. Just go ahead and fill out that page. Give us the information, and you may be the one on next week. So anyway, let's get back to Phil. Let's go back to the thing about the new boys program. Now, I've got a little bit of information that the audience doesn't have, and I believe you're looking at both a short-term and a long-term. So I think you're going to have outpatient as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've absolutely. We've kind of decided that I'm not a real fan of short-term programs per se. Unless they're in a sense of there's proper follow-up afterwards. Our short-term program is not going to be the typical, let's, you know, break them down and rebuild them. That's not my mentality, and I don't believe that works. What it would be is an intense evaluation and a redirection, giving the child kind of a breakdown of what's going on and what they're looking at if they can't turn things around. And then it can tie into the long-term program if the parents feel that, you know what, the short-term program is just not, you know, going to be able to turn them around fast enough. There's lots of kids that can be turned around with just the knowledge of where things are going and that they're backing their parents into a corner. And if they don't, you know, figure out a way to redirect themselves or at least accept the help that's being offered to them, that parents are going to escalate it, and they're going to do what they need to do to love their child, and they're going to go to a point of placing them in a long-term, you know, facility. So the goal here is to give a complete evaluation to the parents so that the parents understand exactly from an educational point of view, from a behavioral standpoint, from a clinical standpoint, you know, what does my child need? And you know, we love to work with other agencies, you know, to co-op on this. I know there's a lot of agencies out there that do part of this already, and we would love to work with them on these their clients to help them, you know, further the direction of their families. But the outpatient counseling is obviously going to be localized to our corporate office in Chino, but we've opened an outpatient counseling office, and we're excited about that. We've had a lot of requests for that, and like I said, we've had a lot of requests for boys. I think part of my interest in a short-term program is we want to try and meet people's needs, and a lot of times it's pretty expensive to get your child into a program, and it would be better to get some sort of help and be able to really be intense about what the child's going through, what the family's limitations are, and get really detailed about that information so that you can better coach the parents and say, you know what, your child has a severe problem in this area, or we think we can turn it around relatively quickly. But I say that and I kind of choke on it because I've just found that short-term remedies just don't work. I've been listening to this ad lately about someone who says that they can stop your kid arguing in 1 minute. I'm just like, buy my CD. Okay, well, maybe I'll put out a CD. I don't know. But, you know, it's such a joke, you know, that we could take advantage of people that are in crisis and really lie to them and say, hey, you know, we can fix this, and we can do it in a minute, or we can do it in a week, or, you know, we can, you know, it's sometimes a kid's ready and willing. But, you know, I always caution parents, you know, when we find that we have a problem, we make the tough choice as an adult to go into counseling and get the help. And I think sometimes it's a little unrealistic to expect that our child is going to make that mature decision when they're already acting out and having problems, that they're going to make that mature decision to get themselves into counseling and get the help they need. And I think that parents need to, how can I say this nicely? They need to stop rationalizing and making excuses for the behavior. I think it really saddens me when I hear parents call up and go, well, you know, my kid's smoking dope, they're cutting school, and, you know, they're cussing me out, and I'm wondering, is that just normal teenage behavior? You know, and I'm thinking to myself, have we got that desensitized to...
Just the fact that you're asking that question is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it, you know, we laugh about it, and I don't mean to ridicule parents that are in that boat, but I think parents need a reality check that that's not acceptable. And, you know, if your child is disrespecting you or you can't trust your child, if you're asking yourself the question, you know, I can't really, you know, can I really trust my child? That's a red flag. Mm-hmm. And if you're saying, well, I can't trust my child, when it comes right down to it, I really don't know that I can trust him. You got a problem. You got a serious problem. And you got to figure out how bad things are. I hate to be cliche-ish, but, you know, it's an iceberg deal. And if you're seeing things on the surface, well, believe me, there's a lot more to it. You know, a lot of times, you know, kids will get caught at some illicit behavior and they'll say to the parents, oh, this is the first time. This is really, I swear, mom and dad, it's the first time. And I'm thinking, dad, mom, please don't buy that, you know, because the odds of them getting caught are less than they're, you know, perpetuating this on a regular basis.
And you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I know I hear from a lot of the parents is they'll say, well, you know, his friend Johnny got caught doing this, and his friend Billy got caught doing this, and Sammy got caught doing this, but my child isn't doing it, you know, and it's, you know, stop and look, he's running with those people. If he's running with those kids, if those things are happening, there's a good chance he's involved with it.
Yeah.
But some of them are so blinded by that, well, it couldn't be my child. And we had I had a young man that we transported that had started the garage on fire. And mom was convinced that it's just the fact that he's running with the wrong kids, mm-hmm. and he felt that he needed to do that to fit in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just the fact that she is already somehow making that okay.
Yeah, defending it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, how can you defend the fact that he burned down your garage? And his answer is, I just needed to fit in with the other kids. Do you want him fitting in with those kids? I don't think so.
It's pretty sad, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's... you know, it's one of the things that, I mean, as parents, when you're hearing these things, you need to bring somebody in to help you. And it isn't the fact that, you know, and I tell parents, it's very possible. And at one point, I remember, you know, when my boys were young, and I would say to the parent, you probably are going to have a better chance of getting my 7-year-old at that time to go to bed at his bedtime of 8 o'clock. Because even at 7 years old, he already knows my buttons, and it's, can I have another glass of water or a glass of milk, or can you rub my back, or can you read another book, or whatever it might be, there's something. They already know to push our buttons. So when this child is pushing your buttons, we're not attacking you and saying that you're deficient in these areas. We're saying they know your buttons just as our own know our buttons. And getting somebody else in there, getting a professional that can come in, intervene, work with them, and work with you, those are the things that are going to help. And don't feel embarrassed to go out there and get the help that you need or that your family can use in that situation. One of the things, I mean, there are, you know, locally, there are educational consultants that you can find. You can find them through your school. They can get involved. They can help you find programs like Phil's that is going to be a program that they've checked out and that they feel is going to be a good fit for your family and for your child. You know, don't be bashful. Get out there, make the contacts, and get the help that you need.
One of the things too I encourage parents to do is, you know, look around and see, you know, what kids are doing well. And if you know the parents, go talk to them and say, hey, you know what, I know that your kid's doing very well. You know, what are some of the things that you're doing to encourage your child? Also, you know, here's what's going on in my life. You know, do I have a problem? I mean, go, you know, sometimes we, You don't go to someone who's bankrupt and say, hey, could you help me with my finances? And I think a lot of times these support groups are great for support. I'm not knocking them at all. They're great for support. But sometimes they turn into advice, you know, giving advice to each other. And my hesitation in that is it would be better, in my opinion, to go to someone who's been successful and say, hey, what did you do to prevent this? What did you do that kept your child on the right track? And go to people that have been successful and ask them how to do it. And then they might be a good sounding board for, hey, look, you know, this is what my child's doing. Do I need to step it up? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I should probably do a continuing segment of the do's and the don'ts. And in this case, this would be one of those, do go to the family that appears to be very successful and talk to those parents. Don't go to your child and say, how come you're not more like Johnny?
Yeah. that doesn't usually help.
No, that's not going to help. But yeah, as far as being able to work with the families, and I know that one of the things that I know that you do that maybe a lot of other people don't know is that, I mean, you know, you scholarship some kids in. I mean, you really have been out there, you know, helping families. So even if there is a bit of a financial snag at some point, don't feel like you can't get help. There are great programs out there that can help you. If you need information, even getting help through your own school district. Again, if you go to our website, again, it's www.answers4thefamily.com. We'll try to help you in that area. As Phil is saying, he does the same thing. You know, he will help you get to that point where you can get help, and don't feel like you can't just because you don't have the finances at this moment. Hang on just a moment here. All of a sudden, my voice got really tight, and I have to drink some water. And I guess if you're on internet radio, you can just say that and do it. Phil, what would be some other advice that you would give to the families or to the professionals that are working with the families?
Well, I think there's a lot of good programs out there. And like I was saying earlier, there's many right ways to do it. So I don't think that, you know, Teen Rescue has the handle on the only way. I think we have a handle on one way, and it seems to work really well for us. But I think there's a lot of good, solid programs out there. But for those who are assisting families out there, whether you're an ed consultant or you're a counselor, there are services like mine, including me, of course, that are really interested in the interest of the best for the family. And that it's important to us that we feel that we're being ethical and moral about the way we treat the families that are in crisis. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with charging for your services. Obviously you got to stay in business, and we do too. But I think that sometimes I've noticed over the years, programs get so caught up in the financial end of it, because this can be a lucrative industry. And we've seen a lot of programs take advantage of it. But we really coach parents when they call us to do their own homework and to check out programs and to call and say, wow, has there been an administrative change lately? Or, you know, what's your staff ratio? Or, you know, what's your mentality? I know, and I won't mention any names, but there are programs out there that are flat out not telling the truth about who they are, what they do. Phantom websites that all lead to the same place, but they pretend that they're, you know, referring to a different program.
And speaking of ratios for a minute, explain, because again, the professionals out there, they know what you're talking about. Explain to the families not only what the ratio is, but what the ratio is for your program, and what a good balance is. I mean, there's a range that we know is acceptable, and tell us where you're at in regards to that.
Well, staff ratio is obviously critical, and it's where, in my opinion, most of the cost goes to. And so if you have a high staff ratio, your program is going to be a little bit more pricey. Our staff ratio is 1 to 3, 1 to 4. So that's pretty good.
That's excellent.
The There's other programs, though, that are out there that are fine programs, and they'll have a 1 to 15. And so I don't want parents to panic that if they see this program and they hear that it's 1 to 15 that they're freaking out and going, oh, this can't work. It does come down to cost ratio, and a lot of parents can't afford, you know, a program like ours. It's on our website. I think it's $52,000 for 24 months of care. So it's not outrageous, but it's still pricey. And so there are a lot of programs that will, you know, be less expensive and still do a wonderful job. The parents need to keep in mind that there are programs even out there for those of you that may not be able to afford anything. And in these economic times, boy, there's a lot of us that are in that boat. And so, you know, if you find that you're just financially completely tapped, you know, hope's not lost. There are programs out there that will help you. Generally speaking, just so you can have a heads up, I mean, it may be ugly, but this is the fact of life, is that most of the foundation programs will want your child to be voluntary, and that helps them with their staff costs. And so it's important that you understand that, you know, that if you don't have any funds, you're probably going to be looking for a foundational type of program, and it'll be good if you can get your child to be willing. If not, you know, there are costs ranging from $800 a month all the way up to $6,000 to $10,000 to $12,000 a month. It's ridiculous. I mean, you just have to find and do some research. And Teen Rescue can help you do that, and without an agenda, and just trying to point you in the right direction.
Yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, whoever it is that you're getting in contact with, communicate. I mean, I think if there was one main focus of this entire thing that you're going through with your children is to communicate better with your child, communicate better with the people that are out there that might be able to help you. If you need the help financially, communicate that to the school district or to whoever it is that you're talking to. It's amazing where miscommunication can cause problems, both in your relationship with your spouse, with your child, or with any of the professionals that you're dealing with. I run into that a lot, where I'll have just a level of miscommunication. And I had a case where, you know, the family told the child after he had been busted for drugs that if that happens again, we're sending you away forever. And to a, you know, 13-year-old, you know, they bought it. I mean, forever was forever.
Sure.
So when they got busted for cigarettes, they then felt, I guess I'm going to be sent away forever, so they ran away. They stole the family car, they wrecked it, they broke their leg. I mean, all of these things occurred, and the parents said, well, we were not going to do any of that. It was just cigarettes. We weren't going to, but they didn't really communicate that. So just any level of breakdown in communication. In fact, I pulled some headlines off because I wanted to show everybody. We all miscommunicate. Newspapers that are supposed to be the people who are trained to be able to communicate at the best possible level. And I pulled off some headlines recently as it related to our industry. And there was a headline on a newspaper that said, police begin campaign to run down runaways. Okay, well, depending on where you pause in that statement, I don't think they're actually going to drive them down and run them down.
Yeah, I didn't think that was legal.
No, I think that's taking it a bit too far.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had another one where it said that, you know, the juvenile court to try shooting defendant.
You know, back on the runaway.
Yeah.
I don't know if people realize that it's not against the law to run away.
That's correct.
And people, you know, think, what? You know, that's dumb. Well, yeah, I agree. It's dumb. But in 1979, they decriminalized running away. And that was for the protection of the 1% who run away from a really bad situation. So what they did is they threw this law out, not replacing it with anything that's valuable. And so now all of a sudden you've got these kids that are running away, actually attending school. And I'm not speaking of all schools, but some schools will not report it. They know the kid's a runaway, but because they're getting the money, because the kid's sitting in the seat, they're like, hey, this isn't our issue, so we're not going to make a stink about it. And yet the parents home freaking out, going, where's my kid? And so parents, you need to be aware that it is not against the law to run away. And even the contributing laws in California, it's a penal code section 272 of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. But the problem is that nobody's going to enforce that. And so you need to understand what you're up against. If you have a runaway situation, you're probably going to have to get some sort of agency like West Shield or, you know, us involved to help you, you know, find that child and get them placed in a long-term program if that's what they need.
That is correct. And in fact, what we discussed a little bit last week is that if you're in a small town situation, odds are that the law enforcement are probably going to try to help you find them.
Yeah, that's generally true.
If you're in a major metropolitan area, you know, like Los Angeles or any other major metropolitan area, they do not have time to handle your case.
Yeah. Unless the child's under 12, you know.
That's correct.
Yeah, then they'll jump on it. But, you know, and maybe 14 and younger. But generally speaking, like you said, Alan, they're just way too busy with other stuff.
Well, Phil, the time has flown by. We've got about... Actually, we don't have any more time. I was going to say we got about 30 seconds, but we don't even have that. Thanks for coming.
I really
appreciate this.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody, again, that's Answers for the Family with the numeral 4, answersforthefamily.com, and Phil,
TeenRescue.com.
TeenRescue.com. All right, everybody, have a safe week, and take care of those families.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. Yeah.